settle in, get comfortable, and let our journey begin as we meet the hosts, internationally acclaimed mediums, Nick and Sylvie Avery.
Hello, I'm Sylvie Avery, and welcome to Spirit's Work, the show that's designed to stretch your mind and broaden your understanding about life on Earth, life after death, and life in other dimensions. Each week, through our connection with our spirit friends, we discuss various topics of interest and take great pleasure in listening to those who continue to walk with us and watch over us. In the most natural way, we are able to cross the divide between our physical world and the non-physical world, when my husband Mick deep trance channels an enlightened spirit called Gregory Hay, who has access to great knowledge and wisdom. This week's show is going to be a continuation of our self-awareness program. So if you'd like to join us with a question related to our subject, the phone lines will be open. The number is toll-free in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's 001-530-876-3222, but the international call isn't toll-free.
Hi, I'm Mick Avery. As well as Spirit's Work on bbsradio.com every Monday at 7 p.m. and every Thursday at 1 p.m. PST, we have another radio show which is called Spirit Teaching, and you can hear that on artistfirst.com every Tuesday at 7 p.m. PST. If you would like to know more about us, our books, CDs, maybe book an Akashic reading, please go visit our websites, which are www.spirit-teaching.com and also now live at www.spiritsworkradio.com. What we're able to do as spirit mediums is to offer you the spirit world's perspective on the nature of our existence. And when I go into the deep trance state, Gregory Hay, who is the spokesperson for an educational group in the spirit world called the White Cloud Group, will borrow my body for the whole duration of the show. I won't know about anything else that happens in the physical world because my spirit and my consciousness are transported to somewhere completely different. Please do look at our website for a better understanding of how we work because we haven't got time to go through too much information at the beginning of each show as it would take up way too much valuable time. So I'm going to say goodbye for this week. It should only take a few seconds before Gregory is here, and Sylvie will be looking after you and dealing with the whole of the rest of the show. So, well done, Syl.
I'm such a hero.
I know, and I have such a small part, really. Anyway, there we go. Right, bye.
Gregory had an Earth life 300 years ago, but has continued to learn and evolve in the spirit world. Well, now he comes to share his wisdom with us for our benefit. The White Cloud Group, whom he represents, were formed to bring us knowledge that will hopefully steer us toward a more peaceful and harmonious future. They are made up of all kinds of scientific minds and scholars from all walks of life, as well as ordinary people. The information we bring is without religious bias or political persuasion and believe in everyone's right to their own views and beliefs. I would just like to take this opportunity to say that we do actually have a spring reduction going on with our Akashic readings at the moment. So if you would like an Akashic reading with us, this is an absolutely unique situation and experience, believe me. Gregory will read from your Akashic book, which is your book of life. We all have a book of life of our eternal existence, being eternal beings. And he will give you an Akashic reading from your book of life, and you will find out all sorts of amazing things, like what soul group you are from, who your doorkeeper is, and maybe your gifts of spirit, and guides, and that sort of thing. So really, it is totally unique, and something that will be last you and you will be remembering for the rest of your life. It is, like I say, we have do have a reduction, a spring reduction, so do go to our website, which is www.spirit-teaching.com for more information about it. Click on the Akashic Reading page and have a look. Take a look at, well, the rest of our site as well. We have a merchandising shop and all sorts of valuable and interesting things. And then do get in touch. We love to hear from everybody, no matter what you have to say. So, anyway, like I say, today we're going to be talking about self-awareness. I do believe Gregory is here now.
With love and light and peace be upon your journey, my friend.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Well, last week we kicked off with the first program in our self-awareness. Well, a little series, I would say, let's call it. And all sorts of fascinating things have come out of that, and I know that you have plenty more to say, and I have plenty of questions too. So, basically, we're talking about so many different angles, aren't we, when we're talking about self-awareness. You were saying that creativity isn't intelligence, but it has to start from somewhere, and, you know, then there's opinion. There's all of these words that we take for granted.
Yes, of course, because they're the parts of structure that help you and that interact with you throughout every breath of your life. The point is, I suppose, that we're trying to make here is that human beings do not really relate to much of the information that's coming in to your physical life that you're interacting with purely because much of it is subliminal. So what you may not understand about, shall we say, a certain given situation, maybe it's to do with various characters in your life that you are friendly with or that you know of, and you are actually witnessing a specific dynamic which is moving along in that relationship, not necessarily to do with your relationship with them, but it may be just to do with your observations of different people's relationships with one another. You are not perhaps maybe realizing fully just how much these relationships have then a bearing upon your life, upon your sense of well-being, for example. Let us say that you are observing situations, relationships within a family group, not necessarily your own family, maybe just your friends or something like that. And even in positive situations, you are seeing actually how that relationship is developing. You are becoming very sensitive to the different vibrations, to the different situations which are unraveling in their lives, as you view them, not as a voyeur of their lives, but maybe as actually some kind of impassioned participant at times as well. Because, of course, you're interacting with them as well from time to time, being that you have some kind of a friendship relationship with them. And so this means to say that you have interactivity. These interactivities help to shape your life in exactly the same way as you may be looking and viewing at situations whereby there may be other interrelationships which are moving along with it. Let's say then, for example, if you're the people who are around you are aspirant teachers or something like that, it may well be this is purely your view of them, or it may well be that they actually don't see themselves as that at all, and they're merely just having their life experience, but that all the time you are in fact learning from the conditions that they display, from the interactivity that they have and shed within their lives, to do with the pictures, the images, the sights and sounds, the tastes, the senses, all of these incoming little shreds of information which actually come to help and bring about insight and reassurance, perhaps evoking different emotions within you, which actually are a part of your interrelationship with them. This means to say that how you feel and see yourself is always colored by this incoming information. How you see your life panning out, perhaps. Now, it may be that these people around you have a certain given agenda. Perhaps their own agenda, which may not have been yours to begin with, but that gradually as your lives are moving along this shared experience of learning, what in fact you are gaining is access to their abilities or their accent of mind. This is to do, of course, with their decision-making process. This is, of course, to do with how they actually put things together. Remember, they're not coming from your position in life, but from their own standpoint, their own view, their own obscured, perhaps, limited view of their understanding of a connotation of some other common event in life. So, for example, it may well be that people within your group or friends or acquaintances actually have quite guarded opinions, specific opinions about certain subjects of life. Now, these may well be the result of deep thought. These may well be the result of impassioned creativity or subject to negative influences, perhaps coming from media, perhaps coming from their own standpoint of view of life. And of course, this is how human beings interact with one another and also create a semblance of normalcy within the life herding instinct. It helps people to bring their essence energy together. If you look at one single being's synergy of life and that you actually kept them in some kind of isolation, if you yourself was living upon an island and that you were free of these other interactions of human physical life, how in fact would you really truly think? I'm not asking you to put yourself out of place of the rest of humanity, or indeed, nay, I'm not saying that you should not agree or whatever to the disciplines, the situations of learning which have been created around you. Verily, of course, very many people upon the physical life will actually interact and look at these different relationships with peoples, and actually this helps to shape and form their own opinions of life. But the problem that I'm seeing here in these kinds of relationships, I'll come back in a moment to the isolationist viewpoint. What happens in these relationships if you are listening only to those who are around you, and yes, these are views and thought forms and opinions which are helping to shape your own opinion of your life, but sometimes these thoughts and feelings can actually upset the inner and deeper emotions within the life case itself. And that how you begin to feel about yourself and observe your world begins to come from a different and slanted viewpoint, one which has not been brought about by your own interaction with it and observance, but rather because of a false observance, or one which has become stronger through someone else's own particular viewpoint or stand, that they are seeing this from this direction, so they're making their decisions and judgments upon various views and collective opinions which apparently shape their life decision-making process. And And so they're seeing it from a very personal point of view. Don't forget that every single individual is in fact not coming from the same place, but coming from some quite different place. It may well be, and part of the understanding that releases the whole situation about the subject, for example, of reincarnation. Why is it then that many people who actually deal with those in the spirit world and have sensitivity to do with the spirit world all suddenly, over the last 30 years, believe in reincarnation, and that that becomes a norm? Quite simply, because it's easier to say, well, yes, I will agree with this or that teacher, than to actually help or draw the strands of information that you actually have to formulate your own opinion. So, in fact, what you are doing is you are making exactly the same assumptions that other faiths or other decision-making processes are created in a fashion which helps to shape and also increase or decrease an individual's power base. So by actually reflecting rather the opinion of the mass, because it's easier to do that, than actually understand the true facts and relationships which are inherent within the problem of trying to find out factual basis of analysis rather and scientific viewpoint rather than the cohesion of hearsay and the situation of the herding value, which then puts a pressure upon your life to in fact exchange your own opinions for those of others.
I think in that respect, I think that we are somewhat limited, though, aren't we, by how much with the information that we get, we can only go by what we get. I mean, and I think that's the whole thing, especially with the reincarnation situation, is if people don't have that many particular other, shall we say, viewpoints and ideas to work, to weigh up, to whether they think that feels right with them,
yes,
then they are only going with what they've been told because they have no other option. I mean, you know, the information that you are able to bring us, because it is so clear and the connection is so pure and so perfect with the fact that you are, it's not Nick channeling words taken from,
yes,
his mind that he's,
yes,
read before or anything like that. You are an individual spirit being,
yes,
with completely, you know, a clean slate with all of these different ideas. So, you see, not everybody has that ability to have that information.
No, I am aware of that. But the problem actually comes about because of the tainted view of what this actual mechanic is, for example. Now, many people will actually even cite, for example, that perhaps certain information might not be viewable to a trance medium, shall we say, through the mechanic of it, quite simply because the trance medium hasn't read up enough about the subject, which, of course, actually completely obviates the whole necessity for being in the trance state in the first place, because otherwise, if you are only going to take in the views and opinions of what you've already read, well, that's actually somebody else's mind and somebody else's standpoint and view that is not actually relating to the whole mechanic of what transmediumship should be about, which is complete absence of thought and complete and utter isolation of mind to enable, without any improvisation of material that has been brought in, which is why we always insist that from the spirit world, that if a trance medium is really going to do that and perform that kind of service for the spirit world, they must never read anything, ever. You see?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So it can't be taken from their mind.
Yes, absolutely so. It cannot be there in the mind in the first place.
But even then, you can get a spirit communicator speaking through expressing their thoughts through an individual, and if they believed in reincarnation when they left the earth plane and didn't explore any further, then they're going to come back and say that it's true anyway, or any other situation, not just reincarnation.
Oh, yes, absolutely. So, no, we're just using that as a yardstick.
But that's what I mean by the fact that we can only go with what we've got to weigh up how whatever it is sits with us. But I think we have to go back to, don't we have to go back to children, to how children are taught to have either self-awareness or, you see, it's drummed out of us as children that we have to just fall into line and you know, almost lose our individuality, don't we?
So, yes, and that really is a part of the fault that is displayed within societies that you observe within your whole aspect of social climbing, if you like, that in order for people en masse to be able to become educated, you have to take certain aspects of educational situations, subjects, vocational knowledge away from the individual in order so that you can specificate a regime, a plan of knowledge that has so far been perhaps proved or not to be substantially true. That is why it is that you have situations of education, shall we say, religious school groups then, who actually pontificate about one specific religious study, and that they will only say that that religious study is the perfection and that all others are evil.
Well, absolutely. It can be a specific religious school.
Yes, whether it's Islam or Christianity or Judaism or whatever it is. Mm. It's this ingrained situation which is not actually coming from the individual single mind, but is coming from the mass or from others and their precursor of power over the small young mind in wishing to shape it and say, no, this is wrong, that's wrong, that thought's wrong, this thought is what you should be thinking, and so it goes on. So it's actually also to do with a generational preset of what you are thinking that education even is as a part of life. Now, if you are talking about the gifts of science, shall we say, that is a completely different matter. To a point, it depends, of course, still yet, on whether you are a person who thinks outside of the box or not, and whether you take upon yourself the various mathematical formulae, the various different situations of systematic experimentation which have moved that knowledge to shape that knowledge in that set of circumstances. Very specific, very rigid scientific rules dictate that the actual system of, shall we say, awareness of the environment in which such a system of knowledge should be gained must be clean and pure. Always remember that, clean and pure. Exactly the same as the mind with a, so say, trance medium, who may be working interdimensionally with the spirit world, it must be a clean, pure mind. Otherwise, the experiment is basically flawed. That's what I'm saying. So if you have a person who is spiritually active and has been reading so many hundreds of books, then the mind has been infiltrated and tainted by other people's wisdom, knowledge, yes, and also inaccurate facts.
Well, the same with schooling.
That's true. Yes, of course. So, really, I'm not suggesting for one moment that all children should have just a random education, but that certain aspects of education, of science specifically, with proven facts, I know we have to be very careful here, because facts in scientific experimentation are only proven up to the point at which they are valid.
Mm-hmm.
And you may well have a time when, for hundreds of years, for example, there is a scientific given fact that this or that is the opinion of the general population. The world is flat, so everybody thinks the world is flat. No one actually ventures outside the given parameter of perhaps 25 or 30 miles. That means they have to constantly see the coastline if they are going to stay and survive. Otherwise, they'll fall off the edge of the earth. Because that was the given fact of the time. However, with great explorers, Galileo, Columbus, many others, they proved that the world wasn't flat, but they actually sailed many, many miles in any direction and came back again. So it actually began to dispel the myth. The scientific premise upon this, of which it is laid, is in fact undervalued, but that's not really truly the case. It's just because all of the parameters of knowledge were not included within it, within the given situation of what the scientific basis could be. Similarly, vis-a-vis, I would say to you, there are many situations and indications so far to date whereby scientific knowledge has expounded and expended so far detailed analysis of one or another given virtue or one of another given parameter set of systems, of situations, of infiltration. Perhaps it may be to do with certain pressures upon a given object or whatever, sheer forces, whatever forces may be involved in the thing that you are trying to describe and ascribe as being a science based in scientific, in the well of scientific knowledge. These still may be inherently flawed facts. And what you are actually seeing is humanity making mistakes again and again. For example, let us begin with this. We can see humanity making broad brushstrokes upon the edges of scientific knowledge using the systems of genetics, for example, which at one stage was purely to do with the very, very infinite and beautiful understanding of very strategic selection of genetics in order to manipulate the well-being and growing appearance of plants. Very well, this has been going on for hundreds of years. Selective breeding of plants, not exactly genetically engineering them, but actually cross-pollinating certain clutches of plants, forms of plants, in order to bring about and produce a specific hybrid, which was then used because it had inherent properties which were helpful, perhaps, to the kind of plant that you wanted to help to produce you food or something like that. The problem with genetic engineering has always been that what you're actually using there are systems of agriculture which then mean that you have to, which are there, they're supposed to inherently either protect the plant from disease, which of course is no bad thing, or they're actually supposed to protect the plant from a certain kind of antibacteria or a certain kind of, antifungus or some other systemic or even a protection against a systemic so that the plant itself produces its own coat to protect itself from a fertilizer or poison that you are actually going to place upon it so that you kill off various other weeds and insects which would otherwise normally bring about a harmful process to that plant. If left to its own devices, it might eat its way through or foul, shall we say, 10% of that plant's nature. So that means to say that instead of having that 10% of waste of that particular plant, instead of doing that, you're actually using genetically modified products of in ways of altering the cell structure of that plant, and therefore what you're doing is not only creating that you would think, as a plant of better well-being, but in fact it has inherent within its structure certain molecular applets which are then possibly dangerous to human health. But the problem is that if, as in the case of genetically modified crops, that what you're actually creating there is a food balance which is unreal in the physical health of the planet. And what you are in fact doing is providing inherent properties of, shall we say, that alter the actual genetics of the plant extract itself so that it becomes inherently a pathway for disease, or a pathway which then changes the actual human habitation and the way that that plant actually infects the balance of the human state, of the physical state, not to mention upsetting up the balances of other creatures like bees, for example, which perhaps are intolerant to the certain specific pesticides which actually may already be a part of the plant's makeup. Therefore, these kinds of protectionist systems have been made in error, in isolation, in various scientific establishments. And these establishments have then enabled this to be unleashed upon the surface of the physical world, where ordinarily they just wouldn't come together. You would not ordinarily have these kinds of conditions. Yes, I grant you, various plants will have inherent properties for fighting specific diseases, and other ones will succumb to them. But that's a different situation, a different notation entirely, than changing a plant's cell structure so as to inherently defeat one or other fungus or bacteria or disease. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, except for the fact that it's inherent throughout the cell structure, which then means that what you are creating is an obelisk of change that actually infects other races, other species, other kinds and forms of living organic tissue. These organic tissues then react violently to the influx of this other and quite different, almost alien-like existence. So you see, you are actually then unleashing upon the population, or indeed upon the world, of organic soil. You are unleashing upon that a various different plant base, which in fact only you are only able to limit its food production, quite simply because what you find is that you are having to place much more of one kind of weed killer or one kind of very specific chemical in order to promote its own food growth so that it quite simply is able to survive. This means, of course, that all the people who grow this particular plant are actually subservient to those who produce the food for it, or the ability to annihilate the rest of the bacteria that's around the plant. Otherwise, it then becomes genetically weak to it. These then become inherent problems, especially as there has been little or no evidence of scientific work being created upon the study of human life habitation, yet alone faunic life habitation, as to the resolve of how these different interplays are going to react with this awareness of these structures of organism. So what I'm saying is here, self-awareness, what's this got to do with self-awareness? It has everything to do with it. It is exactly the same as how you treat oneself is to do with how you treat the planet and how you mark yourself, your own territory of ways of looking at your life are created not in a test tube, out of bounds of that life, but are actually interacting with it. And what I'm saying here, your interaction may well be tainted to begin with because you are looking at views which are impractical or that are unfulfilled.
Okay. Right, so thank you for anybody that may have just joined us on Spirit's Work. You're listening to Spirit Guide Gregory Hay being channeled by Deep Trance Medium Nick Avery. I'm Sylvie Avery, and we're talking about self-awareness. Quite a broad subject, as you can see. So if you'd like to join us with a question related to our topic, then the phone lines are open and we'd love to hear from you. The number to call is a free phone number in the US. It's 877-876-5227. In Canada, it's 888-815-9756. And international callers, it's not toll-free, but the number is 001-530-876-3222. Okay, well, can I go back to children?
Please do, yes.
Because I really think that this is the most crucial part of us as a society moving forward.
Yes.
To develop our, shall we say, self-awareness, our free thinking, our thinking outside of the box, to become more aware of all of these things, the planet, to be aware of energy, to be aware of each other's needs, and everything really, doesn't it? It comes from not squashing our sensitivities as children and not turning us into clones.
Yes.
Okay. So, basically, how do we encourage and nurture children when they are small into becoming these free thinkers, these really little connected beings?
Yes.
How can we do that without turning them into monsters that actually rule, you know, do you know what I mean?
Yes.
That actually rule the household and,
yes,
and
of
just
course.
Create havoc.
Yes, of course.
There must be something, some age that the children are at, or some specific things that we're missing. I know regular mainstream, obviously mainstream curriculum that doesn't actually incorporate thinking outside of the box, particularly is something that is a problem. I know, but is there a certain age that children become when they become apart from hormonal, obviously. Before that, when they are small, that we need to nurture more and watch out for.
Oh, absolutely so. It's really all beginning from the age of two.
Ah, right. Two. Gosh.
Yes, because that is a time when the first battles commence with children and their minds. It's really to do with, of course, their awareness, own self-awareness of themselves. They're beginning to see the motor functions are beginning to rise. So their coordination between hand-eye mouth and also to do with eyes and their own extent of what they can reach. So it's the period of no, don't do that.
Pushing boundaries,
yes. Yes, it's the discovery of boundaries, not only of the conscious self, but also of subconscious ideas. And like amoeba throwing out their appendages or their part of their plasmic energy toward the dark and trying to find what is out there, learning from that experience, which is why, of course, it will be that children would go and stare at light and things like that, particularly firelight, of course, and may even be attracted to go and stick their fingers in it.
Mm.
So the situation is always going to come about how much you protect or nurture your child into this or that. This is where the difficulty lies, because if, as parents, you have not created or understood your own parenting skills, but actually learned by trial and error, it becomes a situation of difficulty, of course.
Mm.
And if you don't learn by trial and error, if you read lots of books upon child maintenance or something like that, or developmental processes to do with children, what are you going to do? Are you going to purely take someone else's standpoint? Here we go again. Someone else's mind, someone else's conscious ability, their development process, what they've actually put through their minds and realized and analyzed. Is their analytical process right and correct? Or is it basically flawed? So it depends on what you want to produce. I really feel that all books upon such a subject ought to begin with, this is the end result of this child experience that we want you to create. And so this is what you are actually going to receive in the making. And the various different pathways studied within this book are going to turn out a child that looks like this. Of course it won't, because different children interact with their journey in a different way, and they will come to make their own decisions. They're still struggling with their own individuality, and that will still, to a point, come to the surface. But that's not just to do with their environmental pressure or how environmentally they're interacting with their lives. It's also, of course, as we know, due to what their spirit is, who their spirit is, what energies and essences they have been through as a spirit being. But the physical relationship of who that spirit is, of the child, is still going to be apparent as to whether the forces of open thinking are allowed to remain open, or whether that is going to be something which has been stifled away. The imaginary voices or the illumination of people that various children see. No, don't think that, Tommy. That's absolutely ridiculous. That there's no one there at all. And so what you are doing is you are diminishing that child's immediate experience, which otherwise could have been perfectly clear-flowing. Perhaps even overflowing with an abundance of awareness of these other situations of energy which result from their own previous interdimensional activity as spirit beings, and that actually what they're in touch with is the perfect continuity of physical state and spirit. And yet, what so often happens is that these situations, as we say, are bled out of them, because they don't conform, or because they are not inspired with one parent's own individual rational thinking, because of the way they have been judged and had decisions made for them. So what you are actually bringing about here is a difficulty with inherent practice. It's part of the problem that societies within even the structure of education, even having an education at all in the first place, can oftentimes be seen as detrimental within a society, and yet within other societies, education is a different balance. For example, take it that if you have a child who is brought up in a jungle condition, so that means to say that the facets of life which are dependent upon that child's welfare are going to be brought about first of all. Don't touch that, it'll bite you, sting you, or kill you. These are the first awareness organisms of the surrounding environment. In order to make that child safe, the parent struggles to keep it out of harm's way of the natural environment. And that includes, of course, harmful situations, perhaps because they live by a river or something like that. So other environmental pressures which are placed upon that child's welfare, and the way that those parents express their continuity in actually being able to keep that child safe. So continuing the genetic line. That, after all, inherently is what you as a parent are designated to make within your society structure, however that is based. It doesn't matter. It's still going to be that you want that child's genetics, your genetics, to survive and survive you, to carry on your genetic lineage and ancestry. That's where you are coming from as a physical being and a sociopath. However, within the structures of a child, what are they coming from? They just see the world of green and water and things which are memorable to them. Perhaps smoke, perhaps to do with the air that they breathe, perhaps to do with the water that they bathe in, the sun that infiltrates through the trees' leaves and bathes their bodies and warms their skin. All of these situations are influences of environment, which, yes, they may well be uppermost in many children's minds, and certainly with the latter views that are expressed of those early times, that you actually feel perhaps at times when you reminisce back into the past of your own physical life and the different situations that happened with you. That then becomes how this pattern of progress has made a difference. Your awareness of yourself. How awareness is brought to you. You see, so even if you're in this idyllic state, perhaps, of living in some different habitation, you are still subject to the precursors of the environment, first and foremost. Don't do this, it's hot. Don't touch the kettle, don't touch the fire. These situations are the parts of the building blocks of the establishment of relationship between the child and the parent that enable the child to listen to the parent, and then the onus is upon the parent to enshrine the energy of the child to make sure that all of those other things that are not life-threatening are allowed to be developed within the child so as not to threaten its individuality.
Well, I think there's the rub, isn't it? I mean, we tend to read many books about, you know, how to bring up your child, you know, and it's really by the particular author that you prefer to how that sits with you, I guess.
Yes.
Hello, caller.
Hi, Sylvie. How are you doing?
Oh, hello.
Hello, John.
Hi. How's it going, Gregory?
Oh, I am tickety-boo. Thank you very much. How are yourself?
Oh, I'm doing good.
Yes.
Enjoying the BBS show, but I have a question for you.
Of course, yes.
Gregory, can you tell us how this virtual world with the computers and how all these kids are in a virtual world most of their lives, how that's affecting them? Is that the same as regular reality, or is that going to affect them in an imaginary way?
A very interesting point. A very interesting point that you make here, my dear friend. I understand that it depends entirely upon how it is the child is actually relating to their own world to begin with. I take your point that it's an interesting facet of bringing in to a child's experience another and different world, which is perhaps two-dimensional, and yet also inherently it helps the child to also bring about other thoughts and feelings of pleasure, of accomplishment, of dexterity with using the computer in the first place, in order for them to interact with that kind of individuality, of that shared experience as well, of course, because not forgetting, I understand it's all in isolation, and perhaps many people might be somewhat worried over such a situation. However, it's exactly the same as if you were interacting with someone in a physical space. All you are doing is you are using what we would call a supplicant. You are using a different reality in order to explain a now-present experience, or perhaps to use certain tricks of the mind in order to bring about a different realities of experience. I do not see it as a harmful situation at all. I see it as a way of showing a child how they may actually use their minds in order to gain understanding of different levels.
I guess it's how much they, in the individual child, how much they get too engrossed in it and how much they realise is their imagination and their creativity, and as opposed to their to reality, what is reality and
that sort of thing. Yes, absolutely. But however, though, it's still to do with the interactivity of that child with other minds, even though they're not necessarily seeing those situations. I see that it may well be to do with, for example, bringing about other relationships with other children or other people as yet identified.
So all things in moderation, really.
Yes, and so that also, of course, may well be various problematic areas that you come across in that situation. For example, it's obviously a certain specific world whereby if you have all children of the same or similar ages interacting with that kind of world, with that kind of communication basis, you are having to make sure that there is not someone else within that situation who is manifesting or creating a false situation, so that they are actually trying to manipulate children's minds into thinking in a certain way.
Oh, some underhand, some other...
Well, yes, quite so. Yeah, so I see that as a part of a problem.
Or even a subliminal message.
Yes, quite so. Yes, and I see that as a part of a problem. In exactly the same way that there used to be, as my understanding of it is, and still is, perhaps, to a certain degree, subliminal messages which are passed up onto a screen, a television set that you have in your household, and that this then illuminates people to go out and buy a certain specific product or something like that, even from something which is flashed for milliseconds upon a screen. Or it may be actually to do with sufficient information which a society or a particular company or whatever wishes to implant upon an unsuspecting given population. These two can be dangerous states. So it depends entirely upon how you relate to the company involved who is supplying the information or the platform for your children to behave in, and how they're going to behave, and whether these kinds of platforms have certain safeguard procedures within them which enables their safety to operate in that given kind of environment and area. Once again, I suppose you're using parental control over this kind of environment. However, I would not rule out the potential possibility for aggravated influence coming from other conscious activity which is not of childlike state or the same age group. That's really the situation, I would say, that care would have to be taken in that kind of environment. I hope that explains your quandary.
That does, in a big way, but can I ask what kind of effect does this repetition that they perform in this virtual world of video games have on their understanding of reality here and reality in other planes, like the afterworld, where there is some hostility there too, and does this train them for the next world?
Yes.
This is a very good question. I tell
very,
you, we've only got
question,
a few seconds left. John, can we answer this next Monday for you?
That would be great.
Yep, I promise you we'll start with this question
absolutely
next Monday, because we've just run out of time.
Absolutely so. A very valid question.
Absolutely. That is
so
really
much.
Good. Yeah. I've written it down. Okay.
Very well.
Well,
thanks
for your call, John.
Thank you, and bye for now.
Yeah,
God
you
bless.
Take care.
Thank
lots of love. Bye.
God bless.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, well, yes, that's really good. That's been fascinating. Gosh.
Very well.
There's so many things there. Yes. Okay. Well, once again, Gregory, it's been wonderful. Thank you.
God bless. May your journey bring you fortune and a wonder to every breath you take. God bless.
God bless. And we hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd like to mention our website again, which is www.spirit-teaching.com, where you can find out more information about us. My name is Sylvie Avery, and you've been listening to Spirit's Work. And until next time, be peaceful, be positive, and focused on your goal, knowing that you're not alone in trying to create a better world. Goodbye.